Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome B-Tech Smith and Steve Mex. B-Tech Smith and Steve Mex, you are now entering the Megacast. The Megacast.
What's up, Ted?
Steve!
Jack you up a little bit.
You jack me up in there?
Yeah, I gotta jack you up a little higher.
Thanks, dude.
Steve! A nighttime edition of the Megacast.
Always a little looser.
I love the nighttime editions.
Yeah. It's fun, too, because it's like, we haven't even been out or drinking or nothing. It's just like, it's nighttime.
It's just a different energy. You're finished with your shift. I'm done already. We should just quit our jobs and do night podcasts.
Yeah. 45 minutes a week.
Yeah, that's it.
Once a week. We're not going to do more.
We'll do like a Patreon thing. People can pay us.
Yeah, man.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
We're going to have to live together.
Great idea.
I love it.
Dude, I'll stay in that weird little room, that closet by the bathroom.
Oh, okay. Well, that one's being, I have my electronic drum set in there, so you're going to have to, you could jam on the drums while you live in there.
Yeah, just a little air mattress or something. Maybe just a sleeping bag.
Maybe just a cushion.
Right.
Well, it's good to see you. We're doing a night one because in a little bit, we're going to be joined by one of the guys that's going to be performing at Defy Wrestling's big inaugural event, which I'm the host and the ring announcer for.
That's crazy, man. You're the ring announcer for that.
I'm so excited. I'm nervous and excited. Matt Cross, he's known as Son of Havoc. If you watch Lucha Underground, he's the dude with the awesome beard, and he wears the mask. And when he's not in Lucha Underground, he doesn't wear a mask, but he still has an awesome beard. Although that would be funny if when he's not wrestling in Lucha Underground, he takes the beard off.
Takes the beard off?
Yeah.
I knew we were having another beard guy in here, so I specifically shampooed my beard today.
Oh, is there going to be like some beard envy going on?
I don't know. I just didn't know what we're going to get into. Yeah. So I was like, I better clean it up.
Yeah, you got to look good for him. It looks like you straightened it?
Yeah.
It looks straighter, if that makes sense.
It does.
I like that.
Yeah, man. Well, and having a beard is like being a woman. Like, a couple days a week, I got to be like, I got to wash it.
Yep. So Matt Cross, he's going to be joining us in studio. He got in a little bit early. Actually, just landed. So we should be having him on in the very near future. But Defy Wrestling is this Friday night. I'm the ring announcer and the host. Matt Cross is wrestling. Matt has been all over the world. You might even know him as M-Dog 20, from back in the backyard wrestling days.
All right. Was that a Mad Dog reference?
You know, I wonder. We got to ask him about that.
You said he's not a boozer or nothing.
Right. He's a straight edge dude. So I wonder if it's an ironic thing.
All right.
It could be similar to CM Punk rocked the Pepsi tattoo logo. And that was kind of like a joke thing, because some people have tattoos with alcohol, so he's like, I'm showing my pride for Pepsi products, which I thought was pretty awesome. So we'll talk with Matt when he gets in here what a great career he's had, from doing backyard wrestling to he had a moment in the WWE as part of that Tough Enough show, and then a guy that just continues to reinvent himself is the right thing to say, but he's just got an amazing work ethic. I think he said on his Facebook that he's now about to wrestle in his 25th country.
Damn.
Which is just unbelievable. I mean, the guy's been all over the world, just dominating everywhere that he goes. He's a fun guy to watch wrestling. He'll be a part of that. Cody Rhodes is a part of Defy Wrestling.
I love Cody Rhodes.
Me too, man. He's badass. And then Killshot, Shane Strickland. There's a few Lucha Underground guys, as well as Jeff Cobb, who's known as Matanza. And then, of course, yours truly. I'm so pumped. It's going to be so weird and surreal to be a ring announcer for a wrestling event.
It's crazy, dude.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I can't go to this first one.
Right.
But, man, I'm proud of you. That'll be a fun thing. I think you're really good. I think you're going to shine in this.
Nice. And don't feel bad, because there will be more.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. In a few months, there's going to be another Defy Wrestling event. I don't know who's going to be a part of it, but from what I'm hearing from my buddy Jim, who runs Defy Wrestling, it's going to be pretty damn cool.
Cool.
Yeah, so we'll do that in a little bit, but let's get our heart racing, our blood pumping, and our brain
functioning.
And Ted, I grabbed a song just for you. I'm really excited about this. I think you're going to love this one. Are you ready to get 10?
Let's do it.
All right.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Steve. Jesus, man. My buddy Steve. My buddy Steve.
Let's get 10, Ted.
Yeah.
Kiss by you, just
never let this sound. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
If you you don't know why we're doing this, if you're new to the MegaCast, last week we did a whole episode about how the Ted Smith's mom, for his birthday, had a Marilyn Monroe impersonator show up to his Christmas slash birthday party.
Yeah, Christmas Eve. I was talking all sexy. And
I saw the video.
Oh, did you?
Yes. It's as awkward as you described it.
Gabby, have you ever seen that look on my face?
You looked like a deer in headlights. Like I've never seen my friend Ted, who's a man of many words, be reduced to being speechless.
Speechless.
100% speechless.
Oh, man.
You know, before we get to the TED Talk, to make you feel better, I don't know if you heard about this, but Casey Affleck, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
My boy Ben's brother.
Yeah, Manchester by the Sea.
He shared a story about how his mom embarrassed him, and I immediately thought of you.
All right.
So here's a story about a time that his mom got him something special for his birthday.
My brother and I had a birthday 3 days apart, and so we would have joint birthday parties. And one year, my mom hired a belly dancer. She came to our backyard. We had little torches out in the backyard. It was about the size of this little room here. And we didn't know, and some woman showed up and she started rolling her belly. It stuck in my mind because it was such a weird thing to do, I think. We had a whole bunch of friends over. I'm sure the other parents are upset by it. I don't know, but had a bunch of birthdays in my backyard. I don't think we did a whole lot, so the belly dancer was a big thing.
Yeah. All right, so he knows the awkwardness.
He knows the struggle. So if you ever have a chance to interview Casey Affleck,
I got to trade the story with him.
Oh, absolutely. I think he would love hearing that because we talked about that this morning. We did a whole topic about BGM Migs, about how has a parent embarrassed you.
Yeah.
So we played that audio, and dude, the text lines just blew up. I mean, more than 10. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but that is a lot in the world of, like, you know, for somebody to take time to text us about, are you going to share Ted's story about Marilyn Monroe? Like, we got a bunch of people texting about that. So I grabbed a clip of the audio of you describing, and we played that on the air this morning as well. And BJ was cracking up too. And Rev, of course, was there.
Yeah, Rev was there.
That's how I saw the video. He had the video. Don't worry, I didn't even bother asking for a copy of it. Out of respect for you, I might play Marilyn Monroe as our push-up song, but I would not do you dirty like that.
It's funny, too. I have yet to tell that story on our show.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I know those two dudes I work with.
Yeah.
And one day on Facebook Live, I was like, Mike, should we, because people, you know, on Facebook Live, like the Men's Room, they listen to this or the podcast.
Yeah.
I was like, should I tell the story? And then Mike was like, they're going to be ruthless with you.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'm sure at some point on the Men's Room it'll come out.
Of course.
But it has yet to show up yet.
Mr. President, Marilyn Monroe.
TED Talks, starring B-Tech Smith.
Damn.
Sorry I had to do that to you.
No, that's fair.
I originally was going to do all the bumper music that we play on the MegaCast, Marilyn Monroe songs. I'm like, all right, that's pushing it. Pushing the limit.
I do know from my friends and family that this will be a constant joke for the rest of my life.
As it should be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That part I'm fine with.
Yeah. Yeah, the further you get away from something embarrassing, the funnier it gets.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Like, I think I've turned the corner now, but...
Like, I share very loving, not lovingly, but very, I'm willing to share with great humor the time when I was in second grade and I pooped my pants in class and tried to act like as if I didn't do it and just sat there in class basking in my own poop in my pants.
Oh, I respect that, though. And my teacher played it tough.
Yeah, until my teacher got near me, and I'll never forget. Tap on the shoulder. Steve, you should go to the bathroom. Went to the bathroom. I refused to leave the bathroom.
Well, I was going to say, what do you do now?
I sit in the bathroom and think, you know what? I'm going to wait it out. I'm just going to stay here until school's over. I don't know what else to do. Next thing you know, Steven, it's mommy.
You were in there so long, they called your mom and she showed up? Oh, damn, dude.
And my mom brought a change of clothes and walked me home. She's like, let's just go home.
How long were you in that damn bathroom?
Oh, my mom, we didn't live very far from my elementary school.
But we still got to be talking 15 minutes.
Oh, probably 30 to 45 30. Minutes.
All right.
Yeah, because we were like 5 minutes from my elementary school. It's like a 5-minute walk. Steven, it's your mommy. Hi, Mom.
Oh, that is brutal.
At the time, I don't think I ever talked about that story. My mom, I don't even know if she remembers it now. It's been like we never spoke about that again. Like, it was the longest walk home. And I never brought it up ever again until, like, recently. And now it's like I share the story and I think it's hilarious. But when I was a kid, oh.
Yeah, terrifying.
The worst. Oh, sorry. Let's just do that again.
Do it again?
Yeah.
TED Talks, starring B. B-Tech Smith.
The TED Talk today, you know, we're still in January and stuff. I would say challenge yourself, you know, whether it's a personal thing about something with your diet or, you know, maybe the way you treat people, you know, maybe just another bad habit you have. I don't know if it's chewing your nails. So just challenge yourself to kind of stop that or, you know, and you know, like I said last week, you're not going to get all of this done in a month. But, you know, it's always good to challenge yourself. I'm going on a retreat. I just got done 48-hour fast, Steve.
A 48-hour fast?
Yeah, just water for 48 hours.
Why'd you do that to yourself?
Well, I had to clean some stuff out.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, but I had started like I...
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, but it's funny because I started doing like a 12-hour one and then 24 and then 36. And now I can do 48. Not that, I mean, look, yesterday by the time I was doing my podcast, I was like, all right, I got to go eat some food.
Yeah.
Because that was right at like the 48-hour mark.
What was the first meal you ate at the 48-hour mark?
I had some coconut rice, a plain, part of a plain chicken, rotisserie chicken from Whole Foods, and some watermelon.
Okay.
But
at first, you almost had me at the point where I was like, just keep fasting. Coconut rice. But the chicken and the watermelon redeemed yourself.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, that I forgot about, man, is, like, you don't eat for 24 hours. I got this chicken, right? I'm like, probably going to eat the whole chicken. And then I ripped apart, like, half of it and only ate, like, a quarter of it and was like, oh, all right, I'm full.
Yeah, because your stomach kind of shrinks.
Yeah, it's amazing that in that time. But either way, it was a good personal challenge going into my retreat this weekend. And, you know, like, I don't know. I feel like the dry January things almost come... Like, I do it every year, so it's almost easier. So this was right. A good challenge. And
so dry, yeah, that's right. You're not drinking anything for the month of January, okay?
Right, and I haven't smoked in the last, like, week or whatever either.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, so, I mean, just...
Still freebasing, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, dude, how do you think I'm up?
Yeah, right. How are you supposed to get through those 48 hours?
So, I mean, whatever it is, whatever habit you're trying to break or something, just, you can always challenge yourself, and don't worry. Maybe you're going to slip up a little bit, but, you know, stay the course and just, you know, like, I think it's good to just challenge yourself with stuff.
I hope, like, when we have Matt in, because this is a guy who's, like, beyond disciplined when it comes to, like, I was listening to, man, it was a while ago, so I'm probably going to be paraphrasing it. Like, I love listening to wrestling podcasts.
All right.
And I remember hearing him on the Kevin Gill Show, which was just, it's a great podcast, and he was great on it. And he was just talking about how disciplined he is when it comes to his body. He's like, this is how I make my money. And if you do a Google search of Matt Cross, let's just say if he was hanging out with us, one of these guys would not look like the others. He's in great shape. I mean, just chiseled. And he apparently like clockwork, he eats six times a day, every couple of hours, always eating. Like,
yeah.
And he works out all the time. And, you know, I mean, that takes a lot of discipline.
It does.
But he's like, you know, I want to be the best at what I do. And part of what I do that makes me great is how you look.
Sure.
So,
I mean, you can't stay on it.
Right. You can't just, you know, you can't rest on your beard laurels.
No, I will say some of those wrestlers, it's impressive how much time they put in the gym.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you look at like a guy like The Rock, right? And he's a little more extreme. But still, I mean, I think he's at the gym more than he's awake, it seems.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how that's possible. I mean, he's at the gym more than he sleeps.
Dude, I almost forgot. I saw a picture today of our old buddy Steve Rock that used to work here.
Yeah.
With The Rock. And it's like, I forgot, when he first got into movies, he really trimmed down and like lost all that bulk.
And he was not nearly as big as he is now back when he was like wrestling in the WWE.
Right?
At all. Like, I don't know what the hell he's doing. I feel like every morning he just like injects himself with like an air pump and just pumps his arms up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's stuff like that. I know if you have enough money, you can go to the doctor and say, hey, this or that, you know, and a lot of people use HGH. I mean, it's illegal if you're competing.
Right. But he's not competing. He's just an actor.
Right. He's an actor. You know, I think a lot of those. Well, yeah. I think a lot of those actors do a cycle here and there. Because what was it? Brad Pitt?
Mm-hmm.
For that one movie, Troy. It was like, how did he get so big?
Yeah. Or Hugh Jackman. Remember from in Wolverine? I mean, he shared some of the ways that he worked on it. It's just freaking ridiculous, man.
The crazy one is, remember Christian Bale. Remember he had done The Machinist or whatever?
I can't remember.
Where he played like the guy with the eating disorder.
Yes.
So he got really frail. And then the next movie was Batman Begins or whatever.
How do you do that to yourself?
It was huge.
Right. How do you do that to yourself? That sounds like a terrible life. Making millions of dollars and having trainers. I get it. But like, still, I don't want to freaking lose that much weight.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's crazy. But yeah, those guys, man, the wrestlers put in a lot of time.
Yeah, and it's obvious that Matt might spend a couple hours in the gym every once in a while. I could be crazy, but I think he spends a little time in the gym.
Just a wee bit.
I'm mentioning wrestling podcasts before we take a break, and hopefully Matt will join us after the break. I'm a big fan of this podcast called Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Bruce Pritchard, for all of you old school wrestling fans, might remember him. He was a character by the name of Brother Love, which was like an evangelist slash Morton Downey Jr. back in the 80s.
And, all right.
You know, he just hit, his catchphrase was, "I love you," and he would just do that kind of crap.
Was he related to Dude Love?
No, it was he wasn't related to Mankind or anything like that.
All right.
I respect that. Nice call.
Thanks, man.
To Mick Foley. It was a great character because he was kind of a heel, and his face was painted red, like as if like that, like he was super sunburnt with like slick back hair. It's just
a slimy looking
evangelist, and he always had a great line that says, "I love you, but that doesn't mean I have to like you." So he, though more so in front of the camera, behind the scenes, he was like Vince McMahon's, like, I wouldn't say his right-hand man, but like his left-hand man. You know, like,
all right.
He was like top three kind of dudes in the inner circle, helping with a lot of the creative, producing some of these vignettes that you would see back in the 80s. I mean, in the heyday of the WWE. He does a podcast where they just focus on one moment in wrestling history that he was a part of, and his co-host, Conrad Thompson, who's great as an interviewer, will just pick his brain. Like, you know, it'll be like a whole episode about Dusty Rhodes joining the WWE, or The Ultimate Warrior, the rise and fall of him, or, you know, what went wrong with this. And it's fascinating if you're a wrestling fan. It's one of the best wrestling podcasts out there. But recently they were just doing like a random one of just like ask him any question, and people were tweeting questions. And somebody asked about like his relationship with Vince McMahon, like if he ever had a moment where Vince McMahon just blew up on him. And the story is awesome. I think anybody who's ever dealt with like an irrational boss is going to love this story.
All right.
So this is Bruce Pritchard from his podcast, which is called Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard. And here he is talking about the one time, which I'm sure there were more than one, but the one time that Vince McMahon just snapped on him.
I was sitting ringside with Vince in the Manhattan Center, and I was producing commentary. I had a headset, and I could talk to each of the announcers individually. So I could speak to Vince, and he's the only one that can hear me. And I override everything in his ear. So as you're going into a commercial break, I would tell Vince, I'm saying, okay, we're going into commercial. I want you to throw to this package. In addition to that, I would write on a note card, you know, throw to WrestleMania promo, let's say that. And I would write that on a card as a reinforcement and give it to him.
So you're saying it and handing it to him.
And that's Conrad right there.
And by the way, I'm sitting right next to him. And he's talking, and he's not throwing to what I want him to throw to. Pushing down on my microphone, throw to the WrestleMania package. And he doesn't do it. And finally, Kevin just goes to it. We get into the break, and Vince takes his headset off and throws his headset down. I said, "God damn it, pal. You got to tell me where the f*** I'm going. I don't know where the hell I am. I don't know where the hell I'm going. You got to talk to me." I said, "Vince, I've been telling you for the last minute what to go to." I said, "Well, God damn it, if I don't do it, then write it f***ing down." And I'm still holding the card with the throw to whatever the hell it was in my hand, right in front of him.
Here comes the best part.
And I stick it right up in between us in his face. And he looks at the card and he reads it. He goes, "Well, f*** you." It just tears it up.
I love that. He's just not going to be wrong because he's the boss.
Even though he did everything that Vince McMahon tells him to do, it doesn't matter.
Nope.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, he's known as Son of Havoc from Lucha Underground. He's going to be in the same ring as yours truly on Friday.
Migs.
That's right.
What's it, Stream Migs?
Stream Migs. Throw those streamers at me. It's going to be very exciting. I want to be treated like a Russian prostitute. It's going to be great.
Don't pee, dude.
Allegedly. Yeah. Matt Cross. And he will be there at defywrestling.com if you want to check him out. And he'll be joining us on the Megacast next.
Wish that you could build a time machine so you could see things no one can see.
Hold on.
Feels like you're standing on the edge.
The Megacast will be back.
Just
just hold on.
What to do for the overly self-obsessed driver who insists on taking and sending selfies while on the road? It's the new Chrysler Portal. It takes pictures of all passengers, including you, the driver. All cameras have autofocus, so you can focus on the road.
How do I turn off the flash? I can't see!
How convenient is this? The driver's side selfie stick can also be used as a car jack or to fight off a carjacker. And thanks to the new car's facial recognition of each of your friends, it plays zoned audio so they can individually hear the music they like the most without headphones.
Can you guys turn it down? I can't concentrate and I can't see. Stop taking pictures!
The new Chrysler Portal, the first selfie car, and the last selfie you might ever be seen in.
Oh, yeah. Lamb of God is my Jane. The mega cast is back.
Look up in the night, see me right across the sky. Hanging there above, forward, but so nearby.
Ted, I'm very excited joining us in studio. You're going to see him on Friday night at the Washington Hall for Defy Wrestling's first wrestling event, Defy One Legacy. Get tickets at defywrestling.com. Matt Cross, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you guys?
Oh, great. It sounds like you just had the trip from hell to get here to join us on the Megacast, and we appreciate that.
I made it. That's overly dramatic. I mean, it wasn't that bad.
The trip from hell.
Yeah.
Where'd you start today?
In Cleveland, where I live.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. And then I was supposed to come in yesterday, but like high winds in Chicago kept me out, and they canceled the flight and then put me on something today. And then there was something wrong with the plane, and then we had to deplane to get on another one, and they said they were looking for a spare plane, which this is new to me. I was like, so I thought, oh, this is going to be another day or so for sure, because what is a spare plane, you know?
Like, right.
How is that a thing? And then apparently...
We got one out back.
Yeah, we just went like right from one to the other. I didn't know they had like planes on hold, you know, because they talked about needing a part. They said they didn't have the part, and then they're like, we're going to look for a spare plane. And I was like, well... I'm never going to get there.
I've had the worst. I remember one time sitting the PA, and they're like, we're trying to find a new pilot. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to get on this plane if that's
we're auditioning them right now.
Right. But for you to say that you've never experienced something like that, I mean, that's saying something because, I mean, from what I gather and from what I've seen over the time and being a fan of yours, it's like you're always on the road. You're always performing in different countries, let alone across America. So yeah. For you to be like, oh, yeah, this is a first for me, I mean, that's saying something.
Yeah, it's true. I think I flew every weekend last year. So it was pretty wild. Over 100,000 miles in 2016. So. Real crazy.
And I saw that you said that, what is it, you're about to hit your 25th country to perform in?
Yeah, in April. I just got booked in the Netherlands. Super pumped. Yeah, I'm on this quest to like be the most well-traveled independent wrestler of our generation, if I'm not already.
I was about to say, I think you are.
Likely, but I want to pad that. You know, I want to make it crazy. Like, I'll hit 25 in April, and then I'm going to aim for 30.
I have a buddy that, like, he's a stand-up comic, and he plans a lot of his traveling based on either the Seattle Mariners or the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
I know you're a huge music fan.
Sure.
Do you ever... look at the calendar and like, oh man, they're playing, you know, whoever the Rancid's playing in the Netherlands. I should book a wrestling show that weekend.
On the record, no.
Yeah, because that could hurt like your bargaining, I would imagine. We know you want to come here. Rancid's playing.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Even specifically, Rancid this year announced a bunch of like overseas. Like, they haven't announced anything in the States for 2017. And they announced a bunch of festivals and stuff overseas. And like, every one of them, I'm like, well, I know a company there. And I know a company there. And maybe nice. I can make that work. And that is the greatness of, you know, working for yourself, being an independent wrestler. Like, I'm a modern day pirate, so I can kind of go wherever. And yeah, they're doing a festival in Milan, and I'm specifically like, I wonder if I can swing this.
So, and I'm sure you can.
We'll see.
Wow. Yeah, I remember seeing them. They played with Rise Against the last time I saw them. Oh, cool. And that was just I was going. I mean, I've seen Rancid a few times, but I was like mainly going. I'm like, oh, I want to see Rise Against. And I'm like, I've seen Rancid. I'm sure they're fine. And you just assume that, oh, this band's going to lose their luster with years.
Oh, yeah.
No, not at all. Like, they were just still as mind blowing as they were when the first time I saw them when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, I'm not a religious person, but that is the closest to, for me, that it gets to like a religious experience. And it's so like cliche, and I've heard people say that, and it's like, come on. But like, it is that for me. And then like once a year when I do go to church on Christmas Eve, and like you all sing together and everything, I'm like, this is, I don't know, I'd get the same thing out of punk rock that I would out of like a church thing. Like, we all sing songs we like and mean a lot to us together. And
yeah.
Then, you know, it's like, I'm like, this is really the same. And it's like, you're positive and you're happy and you're with people that you like and you're like showing signs of peace to one another or whatever in your own little way. And I'm like, all right, this is church. So I just, specifically Rancid shows for me are like very, very important.
The delivery system might be a little different as far as musically, but you're right. I mean, with the message and what it does for you is exactly the same.
Yeah,
there's a guy who does, I play in a church band and I never thought I'd ever play in a church band playing, you know, punk music and rock music. And I was like, it's weird though, to be in a worship team, as they would say. I mean, because when I first got there, I'm like, okay, I'll do this as a favor. I realized I was just trying to impress my wife, but she was my girlfriend. I was like, this will make her mom and her grandma really stoked about me, this tattooed guy that they're a little questionable about. I'm like, this will win them over. I'll play for Jesus.
Yeah.
And, like, and I do it.
Jesus loves the double bass.
Oh, yeah. I showed up with some Coors Light and a double bass drum. They're like, get that out. No. But man, like, you know, you play in a rock band and you finish a song and everyone cheers and that's awesome. And that's such a great adrenaline rush. But then when you do it at a church, they're not cheering after the song. They all, amen. And I'm like, this is weird. And
strange, yeah.
But then when you when you're noticing that they're singing along and you're making eye contact while you're playing, it's like, I'm kind of getting goosebumps even thinking about it. It's a surreal experience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And there's something, I mean, the communal aspect and all that. And
100%.
Just, you know, and I think there's things to be said just for like positivity in general. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's what church brings to a lot of people, is like everyone getting together and thinking positively about something. And that's the idea of prayer to a lot of people. And like, I get that out of punk rock. Like, I get there and like, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for punk rock. Like, these bands traveling the world, you know, living this alternative lifestyle and being like, you can do it.
And being in control of your own destiny.
Yeah, and just that whole DIY aspect of it. Like, no one ever, there's no, you know, it's Black Flag. It's like, let's get in a van and make this happen somehow. And I was like, I'll get in a van and I'll make this happen somehow. Like, I have no boss.
Awesome.
I have no, there's no pattern. There's no, I didn't have a book of like, here's how you do it. I still am just making it up as I go along. And it's like been 16 and a half years of, but just to have, just to take that leap of like, okay, I'm seriously going to try to do this. Like, even though it's ridiculous, like,
yeah,
that's, you know, I don't know. It's just been a crazy ride. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not the same way like a church aspect, but it's faith in yourself or faith in, you know, what you want to do.
Right.
You know?
I like that.
Well, I always say, like, I'd probably be a giant pain in the ass to, like, the people in my church if we actually had, like, a talk about religion and the Bible. Because sometimes, some things I'm not 100% sold on, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, I have a lot of questions, and I don't think that's bad.
Sure.
But some people are just like, how dare you question anything? What I get, and like you brought up, is that community feeling.
Yeah.
Is wow, everybody's here for a sense of faith, a sense of hope.
Yeah.
And there's something really magical about that. And I did want to say, you're bringing up the DIY aspect of what you do. I have so much respect for you. I'm so excited to talk to you because I feel like, you know, it's like sometimes I have to think about, like, how does someone affect me? I'm very selfish in that way, in a sense. You know what I mean? But, like, how does this person inspire me? And you're a man who's had so many ups, a lot of ups, and probably some downs as well doing in the world of wrestling. And I think about, like, you know, you started very young and you get a great buzz in the world, you know, as M-Dog 20 and in the world of backyard wrestling, and you're on a video game and all this great stuff. And the next thing you know, the WWE is knocking on the door and Tough Enough happens and it doesn't pan out the way you want. And I think about in life, that's like a major blow probably of like, should I still do this? You know what I mean? And and not only did you still do it, but you've like, I don't know if reinventing is the right word, but like, you just said, you know what, I'm going to take control of my own destiny. I'm going to control my own future. And that's something I think a lot of people could be inspired by, in the sense that, you know, you can take over the wheel, you know, grab the steering wheel of whatever it is that your life is going to throw at you, as opposed to just like resting your laurels and hoping the WWE is going to give you this big break. And I feel like you've probably, have a way more satisfying and amazing life and career because of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things just in life like that. I always think about, I mean, like, look at, like, XM radio type thing and, like, the Jason Ellis show. And it's like, that guy couldn't have been in high school and met with an advisor, and let's say he did, and an advisor says, what do you want to be? And he's like, well, there's going to be this thing they invent called satellite radio. It's not even a thing. I can't explain it to you. And then on that, I'll have been a professional skateboarder, and then after that, just because I have crazy friends and crazy experiences, I'll then just talk about it, and that will be my job. What? So it's like, this like crazy time that we're in kind of carries over in every different field. So it's like, for wrestling, it's like, I don't know, I'm going to make something happen. And then you are in charge of your own destiny and stuff. And I'm just so grateful that we are enjoying this kind of like renaissance, if you will, in wrestling, where it's kind of like on the up and up, like the world over.
What do you think made that change the way people view independent wrestling? Because I remember, I mean, I've been a wrestling fan my entire life. And for a while, you thought of independent wrestling as the place where the horses go to die, in a sense. You know, like the old dogs show up there.
Sure.
And it's sad and depressing from some of the documentaries you might see, and you're just thinking, well, that's independent wrestling. It's a place where guys just go because they can't go anywhere else. Whereas now, and for many years, it's a whole different world. It's an exciting thing, and I think it's reignited my love for wrestling. But what do you think made that turn?
I don't even know. It's crazy for me to think about, because now I just feel like such an old timer or whatever. And I'm like, wait. It's been 16 and a half years for me. So I very, very, very much was alive and a part of that entire transition. Like when I started in Cleveland, Ohio, it was a garage where you couldn't hit the ring on two sides because it was just so slid in with no, you know, room on either side. You couldn't do suplexes because the ceiling was so low. I mean, it was literally not like a garage. It was a garage. So no heat, car parts laying around. Oh my gosh. Everyone was like a 40-something-year-old steel worker that just got, you know, off their shift at the mill and came down, and now they're going to like do this wrestling thing. And then here comes like an 18-year-old kid who they are then just going to beat up. And that was pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I definitely got brought into like that sort of that way. And it was just, I mean, no one, we were just the kids forever, the kids. And now it's just completely different, and you can just kind of, you know, anyone can get in, and it's just the whole means of it is different. And then, like you said, like, the shows were these 40, 50-year-old steel workers kind of doing whatever they could do that resembled wrestling, but it was clearly, it was like guys pretending to be wrestlers, more or less. Whereas, like you said, nowadays, if you go to an indie show, you're not going to see guys pretending to be wrestling. You're going to be wondering why you don't see that style televised anywhere.
Right.
And you're going to see better things, maybe even, and a totally different style. So I don't know. It's open for debate what made that happen, but I mean, slowly but surely, just
I'm
the
glad
past,
it did.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'd say for the first 14 years that I was in wrestling, it wasn't like this like drastic and terrible like decline, but I would say like a very, very slow, gradual decline over those 14 years. Every year just kind of went down, down, down. And we always heard, oh, the business is cyclical, it'll come back, whatever. And I started to doubt that at some point. I'm like, I don't know, man. The internet's like really cool nowadays. Like, MMA is getting really cool nowadays. Like, there's just so many video game systems, everything. I was like, maybe it doesn't come around this time. Maybe in the 40s and the 60s or something it did. Maybe now, not so much.
It's funny. We hear that now in the world of radio. Radio's dying. And it's like, well, I don't know if it is. It's just, it's done differently now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, whether it be the world of podcasting, the world of satellite radio, the world, even terrestrial radio, there's new ways to do it. And it's like, I think the old dogs just want to assume it's dead because I can't do it anymore.
Right, right. You know what I mean? There you go. So then just in the past 2 years, wrestling has just changed. And I mean, it's exciting for me because even to be here doing this, I mean, like, I've been to Seattle before outside of wrestling, but now to be here for what I love to do, like, that's amazing. And it's just, and the feedback I've got so far has been really great because everyone here hasn't seen me before. Because it's like, this isn't just a new city or a new state. It's like a new region, more or less.
Dude, it's
like,
a huge deal in my head. I mean, I know from all my friends that are like similar wrestling fans, it's like, holy crap, you know?
Yeah.
Matt Cross is here. Son of Havoc is coming. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah. And just in Seattle the last few years, I mean, I remember 5 years ago meeting guys that were doing it, and it was like, yeah, all right, you're at some random thing. Like, I'm not going to go to that. Now it's gotten so much bigger. I mean, there's almost like competing brands.
And they're all, and I love, we talk about community. What I'm loving to see now, I mean, and of course, we're talking about, you're going to be at Defy Wrestling's very first event, which is defywrestling.com. It's, you and I are going to be in the ring together, if you didn't realize that.
I've heard.
No, I'm not actually going to be mixing it up.
Steve's
going to
wear a singlet. Yes. It's going old school.
Oh boy. Yes. You know.
I'll be ready.
But I'm beyond excited about what we're about to embark on. But there's a great community just here. I mean, 3-2-1 Battle is a fun, weird vibe of wrestling. And I just went to one of their events recently and I was blown away. Lucha Libre, Volcanica, and Project 42. And it's cool because it's not, I'm sure there's a friendly competition, obviously. Yeah. I mean, no different than if you're in a band. I mean, sure. Being in bands, you have friends that are in other bands, but you'd still want to be better than them in a fun way.
Yeah.
But there's a just a really cool love and community vibe that I witnessed as an outsider. And I was like, this is cool. I'm really digging this. And I feel like what Defy Wrestling is doing is kind of taking a little bit of all of those and bringing a lot of these great local talents together to shine and then bringing you guys in. For us wrestling nerds to geek out about, and Cody Rhodes and Jeff Cobb and Shane Strickland. I mean, these are all your buddies.
Yeah,
and you're all going to get to hang out here in the Northwest.
I can't wait. Even you just saying that, because I'm sort of, you know, just got off a plane and only half in the game here. So it's like, I forgot. Like, I wrestled Cody Rhodes a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
He became my favorite wrestler, like, that day. And, like, wow. I'm not even kidding. Like, the dude's straight up my favorite wrestler now. So you even just saying that now, I was like, I'm a fan. And I'm like,
that's awesome.
The giddy little girl that's like, Cody Rhodes is going to be here. Like, you just reminded me, and now I'm all happy just to see him. Because, like, he's amazing. So, like.
And he's also a guy who you can find a lot of inspiration from. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, just the idea of, I'm not happy where I'm at. They're not using me in the way that I want them to. I'm just going to do it on my own.
Yeah,
and he's been
insane.
Just tearing it up because of that.
I wrestled him for a group called Next Generation Wrestling in Tennessee. He got something messed up with his flight, so then he rented his own car just to make the show. How many guys would have been like, the flight's messed up, I can't make it?
Right.
End of story. Every one of them, without exception.
Yeah.
So he, on his own, he left his bags, because his bags he would have had to wait for, he would have missed the show. So he's like, you know what? Forget the bags. I'll rent a car. I'll make the show. So, like, that's the pretext under which I met him. So I'm already like, what? And then just literally the coolest guy of all time. And everyone that comes to the show and sees, like, you'll see, like, he interacts with everybody. I mean, like, literally the coolest dude, like, in wrestling right now. So, I mean, the fact that he's there is huge. And I mean, like, what a tear he's on. Like, in the past year, he's done everything you could possibly do in 20 careers in wrestling, and he's done it in 1 year's time.
It's like he was a part of, like, all the big, like, I don't know if you call them pay-per-views anymore, whatever, you know, from, he did in the same year, or in about a year's span, less than a year, WrestleMania, Final Battle, Bound for Glory, and Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's insanity.
No one else has ever done that.
No.
That's crazy. Do you think he has a little bit of, like, I want to prove to the independent wrestling community, because you say something like where he didn't cancel. Do you think there's almost a part of him in his head that he's like, I want to prove to these guys I'm not, like, coming in as, like, a diva? Not that he is, but you know what I mean?
No, he loves it. It's like, it's... The night I wrestled him, I was up until 5 in the morning trying to figure out, like, his angle. And I don't know if that's just, like, a poor commentary on, like, my state of the world. Because I'm like, what's his end game? Like, what's he trying to... I don't get it.
What's your deal, man?
And the promoter in Tennessee is like, maybe he's just cool, man. And I'm like... Well, I know he's cool, but, like, what's he trying to get? Or what's he trying to, like, when you're involved in this crazy, you know.
What's he want from me?
Yeah.
He's too nice to me.
He texts me at, like, 5:30 in the morning. He's like, F, that match was awesome. And I'm like, go to bed. I know that, and I think it was awesome, but, like, it was just another match for you, wasn't it? Or, like, you know, it's just like.
That's cool.
You're not just on to the next one? I mean, so it's like, I don't know, he made just this huge impression on me, and to be able to do what he's doing every single weekend and go out there, it's awesome. So he's going to bring a lot to the show. And like I said, all the feedback I've been getting is just people, like, none of us have ever been to this, not only city, state, but the whole region. So it's like everyone, there's a lot of excitement, and that's exciting for us, you know, because it's like, no fault of their own, but a lot of wrestling fans get jaded because there is just such a wealth of good wrestling available to them nowadays.
Right.
So this is, let's bring something kind of new and fresh into a new area. So it's new for everybody, which is obviously just exciting.
And it's not like
people, I was going to say, people here love something that they can call, like, just the Northwest own thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that's part of the reason working in radio is great in this town, because it's like, we're so far removed from the rest of the states.
Right.
So it's like, whether it's a Portland, Seattle thing, or, like people love the Northwest kind of homegrown stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
It sounded like you had a little bit of a process, though, to be even able to wrestle here in Seattle, as far as, like, you had to go to a doctor. I mean, the rules and the laws here in Washington are still ass backwards, it sounds, compared to other cities and other states.
Well, I now have a combative license for combat sports in Washington
State. For combat sports? Like, you go through the same state commission as if it's an MMA fight?
Absolutely. So I had to fill out my record. I'm 200-0, by the way.
Oh.
Officially.
Did you really put that down?
Yeah. You said, where's your record? I'm like, record. I mean, come on. If I'm going to put this, yeah. So I'm undefeated.
You're the first 200-0 fighter I've ever met.
Yeah, I'm probably ever, you know. So if any of you want to fight, I'll be 201 by the time we leave the studio. I mean, I'm down for it. I'll need to see your license before we fight, obviously.
Damn it, I didn't bring mine today.
Well, see, you need to go through the proper channels. Crap. I know that every state's different.
That's awesome.
I know in Maryland, they have a commission that's somewhat strict, but they have the doctors on site, so you can kind of pay and take care of everything there. It's like a one-stop shop type thing. But I remember like meeting with the doctors and blood pressure and all this kind of stuff and questions. And at some point, he was like, okay, now jump on 1 foot for 2 minutes. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. And he's looking at me, and he's like, no, you have to jump on 1 foot for 2 minutes. And I'm like, this is a real thing?
It's so strange.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, I thought you were totally kidding, dude. He's like, yeah. No, it's this thing. And then we take your heart rate after. And I was like, all right. So, I mean, again, every state is different. I thought that was the weirdest one. But, yeah, Washington's not messing around. So the same exact as if I was going to come here and, like, beat everyone up and whatever. So
you're ready to go now.
Yeah.
You're licensed to kick ass.
Yeah. And it's only good for a year. So, like, hopefully I come back. And next year I'll have to go through the whole process again. And, yeah, that was all kind of news to me.
How long of a process was it for you to do something?
It's involved. Yeah, it's, like, it's annoyingly involved. Like, you really had to go through like everything. Like, it was strange.
I will say this: stay calm. I MC some MMA fights down at a casino in Tacoma.
No, yeah,
and we've run into some issues that a couple guys, like, they're just jacked up and their blood pressure goes up and they're like, well, they can't fight. So we literally had one guy. We got him on the floor, just laying on his back. We're like waving him down, like, go to your safe space. Like, calm down. You know what I mean?
See, now you're from now. See, I thought I was out of the water, and now...
The good news was, though, once he got it lowered, he went out there and knocked the other dude out. Right.
Maybe it was good for him to calm down for a half a second.
But he's about to fight in an MMA fight. Like, I think his blood pressure might be a little high.
Yeah, no kidding, right. You'd think they're... Right. It should be the opposite. Like, no, you're normal. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You realize you're about to fight someone, right?
In a locked cage.
So I'm 1 5-hour energy away from not doing the show is what you're telling me.
Just say, look, we got great coffee, but go easy, brother.
Yeah. You might want to drink some tea before you...
Yeah, right. So I've made it through all these flight cancellations and all this licensure stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
Whatever. Now I'm still not out of the woods.
I'm just ready for this fight.
Yeah.
You got to tell... I saw the pictures and I was I smiling from ear to ear. And you got to tell Ted the story. I saw it on your Twitter and on your Facebook, your grandma got involved in a wrestling match.
Oh,
I
thought, yeah.
I was like, when does that ever get? When do you ever have a chance to get your grandma involved?
When you're part of the Cross family. I will pretext the story by saying that said grandma went bungee jumping when she turned 70.
Dope.
So, yeah. So anyone in the world that thinks I'm crazy, it's like, we won't know for another 35, 40 years. Like,
You're just starting.
I'm just super normal now. Like, if I'm 71 and bungee jumping, then I get to officially be quote unquote crazy. Until then, who knows? And I remember her telling me, she's like, oh, did your cousin tell you what I did? And I was like, I don't know, play cards or something? Like, what does a grandma do?
Knit?
You know? Yeah, knit something? Yeah,
exactly. Rosary beads? I don't know.
She's like, I went bungee jumping. And I was like, right. Thinking that it must be a new card game that, like, she doesn't know what it is. So I'm like, all right, grandma, like, explain to me what bungee jumping is.
And she's like, my grandson's a moron. He doesn't know what bungee jumping is.
Well, she's like, well, it's kind of like this big rubber band, and they put you on this crane and went up 120 feet, and then you could go feet first or head first. So I went head first, and I still was like, she pulled my leg? Like, I don't understand this. And then my cousin had pictures of my grandma, like, just flying, arms out, head first, like... Which she probably put on a t-shirt. But yeah, amazing. So yeah, so she came to the show. I didn't know she was going to be there. This is in Cleveland, Ohio, where I live, at Absolute Intense Wrestling, my home promotion.
Nice.
And she was there, didn't tell me she was coming, didn't know anything about it. The ref at some point says something to me about a grandma, but like, I'm tired, I'm beat up, I'm trying to do my thing. Like, I don't have time for... like extra information. So I just, it like went in one ear, not the other. I was like, what did you say about a grandma? Like, whatever. Later in the match, I'm just kind of down on the mat, whatever, trying to regain my, you know, strength or whatever. And like, I look up and I'm like, oh, it's my grandma. I'm like, my grandma's here. And I'm like, oh, that must have been what the ref is telling me. Like, so I'm wrestling Colt Cabana, who obviously is, you know, very entertaining and stuff.
Hell
so,
yeah.
So he's getting into it with what he thinks is just a grandma. No, unbeknownst to me, him, it's my grandma.
Oh, my God.
So he's like, here's a, you know, animated old lady, whatever, I can get something out of this. So he's kind of jaw-jacking with her back and forth.
And she's ringside. Yeah.
No, she's not. She makes her way ringside.
Oh, my God.
So from the back of the room, she starts charging forward.
No.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I'm watching it happen, and I'm like, well, my family's crazy, so, like, grandma's probably going to get in the ring, you know? Like, mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I'm glad it's, you know, Cabana and myself. Like, no, I don't think she's in any danger. Or, like, I don't know how this is going to go. But, I mean, this is the beauty of wrestling, too, because it just unfolds before your very eyes, because every person involved was like, my grandma probably didn't know what she was doing. Cabana doesn't know what she's doing. Oh, I don't know what she's doing.
This is like extreme improv right now.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, can she get over? She's 83 years old. Like, can she get over the guardrail? Like, I don't. And I'm like, oh, I hope she doesn't just, like, get hurt getting over the guardrail. And, like, she made it there and then just kind of shook it and was, you know, animated or whatever. And then I asked her after the fact. I was kind of like, I thought you were getting in the ring. She's like, yeah, I wanted to. I couldn't get over that guardrail. So sure enough, had she been able to get over it, or if there was a break in it, she was coming in the ring.
She didn't tell you?
No, I didn't even know she was going to be at the show. Yeah, she didn't even like necessarily mean to. It just kind of happened, and you know, like,
how do you stay focused at that point? Like, to be, I mean, because you got to still stay in that moment as a wrestler, and now you're like worried probably about grandma's health.
I mean, that's the beauty of wrestling, right? Because it was just happening. It's like these moments create themselves.
I don't know many other wrestlers that probably have had that moment though, where grandma got involved.
Yeah, we didn't go over that in wrestling school, so yeah. And then the following month, she was sitting ring. Side this time, and then I got her to beat the crap out of my opponent, Gregory Iron. So she kind of stood up and started giving him his grandma slaps and really giving it to him. So yeah, she's becoming a little local celebrity in Cleveland.
We
so
got to get awesome. Her a combat license and get her out here
right,
into the Northwest.
Right, yeah, exactly. Once she gets her blood work, and then that is like secretly and weirdly, and I don't know how possible it is, but like sort of some, like, she's been amazing my entire life. So this is cool for me because now, like, we're talking about my grandma in Seattle. Like, that's amazing. And again, yeah. From, like, she's always been so cool to me. So the fact that the rest of the world is getting to see a glimpse of how cool she is, like, very fulfilling for me. Because I'm like, 100%. Yes. Like, because, again, my immediate family and my friends are all like, your grandma rules. And, like, she always has. And I'm like, the world needs to know how much she rules. So I do have this weird, like, I want to take her on the road, or like I want to do like grandma road trips and like get her bookings or something. Like, I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm very into the whole idea, and we're going to see if, I don't know, let's get her involved, you know. Why not?
I think about, like, you know, with us in the world of radio, like, I think I have the most amount of joy is when I get to play like a clip of my mom leaving a voicemail for me, because the voicemails from my mom are just ridiculous. Sometimes she's had a couple too many shots of Jack Daniels, and she just rambles, thinks she's still on the phone with me, and I'll play them. Sometimes she'll even say, don't play this one on the radio, and I'll of course do that.
Yeah.
We've called Ted's dad up from time to time, and there's something cool about letting everybody kind of get a peek inside the curtain of who you are.
Sure.
You know, it's like,
that's, yeah, it's funny you'd say that too, because like, I am my grandma. Like, we are identical. Like, it's just, she's, again, 83 years old. She like puts on costumes and dances around. Like, it's me. Like, everything I've ever done or known that I thought was original or unique or was me, it's actually just following in her footsteps and doing things that she did and has done. And it's like, more so than even my parents. It's like, it skipped a generation, and I'm like, I am my grandma. And so it's like, it makes sense that like, she was so comfortable in that role. I mean, all that just happened. I mean, like, she comes up to ringside with Cabana and is like yelling and stuff. And then like, she's wearing one of my shirts under her jacket. So she opens her jacket and then like does a 360 toward the crowd to like get a big pop. Like, how is that like, how is that a thing? I didn't realize until I watched the clip after the fact. I'm like, look at my grandma going for like the big pop. Like, wait, I don't even, doing a 360 toward the audience. Like, I was like, what? Like, you can't, that stuff you can't teach though. Like, that's just in her grandma jeans or whatever. And like, it came out, you know? And it's like, but that's where I came from. So it does like give a lot of insight into like, oh, you're weird or you're crazy. And it's like, no, man, my whole family's nuts. Like,
I like that.
What am I going to do? Like, work behind a desk or something? Like, no, we're all nuts.
That is awesome. Has there ever been a time, we had a last week on our show, I don't want to dime Ted out, but there was a moment.
Oh, it's all right.
All right. Well, his mom, for his birthday, she lives in Maryland, mm-hmm. and his birthday's on Christmas Eve. So
Christmas Eve. I'm 36.
Yep.
I have a bunch of people over.
A packed room.
Packed room, beverages, food, everything. There's a knock on the door, and it's a Marilyn Monroe impersonator.
Oh, boy.
All right, so then she does, like, her whole sexy thing, right? But it's like, from the sender, your mom.
Oh.
And, I mean, it was the most uncomfortable thing of my entire life.
Oh.
So I was wondering, has there ever been a situation where, like, someone in your family's completely embarrassed you? Like, could you think, oh, maybe it's grandma, maybe it's not?
I don't know. They don't really come, outside of grandma, they don't really come to the shows. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I probably just like
just blacked it out.
Blacked it out or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I did American Ninja Warrior the other year, and I like specifically told basically everyone in my family, like, don't come, you know? Like,
yeah.
I can't have any of you there where I'm trying to like work, so to speak. So they're doing it again in Cleveland this year, and I just applied, so I'm hoping to do it again. And I talked to my grandmother in the submission tape, so I would like her to come.
Yeah,
like,
you gotta have grandma there.
Yeah, yeah, she's gotta have a sign.
She should run the course, honestly. Like,
they probably would let you.
Yeah, why not?
Plus, like, that's good for TV. Like, we got this dude running in the course, and then his grandma's here going crazy.
Yeah, not even that's good for TV. My grandma's good for TV. So
yeah,
and it was fine. I was telling her, like, we gotta get you involved. Like, because
why are we interviewing you? Where's grandma?
I know. Right?
Let's call her up.
That's the funny part is she's so busy all the time. If you called her right now, she wouldn't even answer. She's doing something. Like, she's way more busy than me. And like, I'm the busiest person I know. And like, you can't get in touch with her. So when she showed up at the show again, she didn't tell me she was going to be there. And
I think that's funny that she didn't even bother to tell you, like, hey, put me on the list or anything along those lines.
And then I was like, hey, we got to get you involved the next month. And she's like, well, when is it? You got to give me more of a heads up. I don't know if I can make it. I'm going to be busy. And like, it's a Friday night. I'm busy Friday nights. And like,
grandma, what are you doing?
Of course you are, 83-year-old grandma. Like, and she's like, how involved am I going to get? I don't know if I'm in any shape for this. I got to do Weight Watchers. She was really freaking out. I'm like, grandma, like, Just be grandma, man. Don't worry.
Just be grandma.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
You definitely have to bring it to American Ninja Warrior.
That'd yeah.
What was that experience like for you?
Amazing, nerve-wracking. Like, it's crazy because I thought my leg up on the competition was going to be that I know lights and cameras and I'm not scared of those things.
Right.
Like, that's what I do for a living. So I'm like, all these nerds in their backyard training on these homemade courses. Like, right. Ha-ha. Like,
yeah, when the camera's
on.
It's
way different when a producer's like, do it now with a million cameras on you and all these interviewers and microphones in your face. And all of a sudden you're going to be like, I have no experience in this. I'm going to freak out. Like, so I'm like, ha-ha-ha, I'm going to, you know, rule based on that. What I didn't realize is every time I have a camera on me or a microphone in my face, I'm talking about pro wrestling or something that I'm very comfortable with that I've done for a million years. Mm-hmm. I don't do obstacle courses. I don't do obstacle courses that you can't practice on. I don't do ones where if you mess up and fall in the water, it's going to be nationally televised. So it was completely new. So all the lights and cameras that I thought were going to be my leg up backfired on me, went 180, and I was like, I was the guy who's like, oh my God, there's so many cameras and there's so many lights. Oh God. And I just became hyper conscious of like, when I fall in this water, it's going on national TV. Oh my God. And I'm like, you know, I fancy myself this athlete or whatever. And I'm like, my whole aura can just be destroyed instantly. And then down to the little things of like the minutiae of when you watch the show, it's like a side scrolling video game. And then when you get there, you're lined up directly with the course. So it looks completely different because you're like, No, I know this from the side. Like,
I didn't think about that.
You know what I'm saying? So you get there and every obstacle, you see them overlapping and you're just looking at everything dead on in front of you and you're like, oh, no, I can't. No, this looks different. It doesn't look, no. It's like one thing. I was very much the guy at home, like, oh, I can do this. No problem. Then I got there and I'm like, can I do this? And you don't get to warm up. You don't get to practice. You don't get anything. So just 3 a.m, they send you out there. I did St. Louis. It was 33 degrees. It snowed that night. So, there's no sense of that on TV either, which it's like jump over water, which is nearly frozen, and grab this metal bar and avoid hypothermia. And like, so I'm shirtless and like the snow being like, and every other city, the qualifying cities like L.A. and Dallas and Orlando. Right. And I'm like, right. I hate all you people, right. by the way. Like,
what was I thinking?
Yeah. So.
So this go around, will you... Are you going to like try and find someone who might have like their own version of the course, like in a backyard or something to kind of get more mentally prepared for it?
Should I? Yes. Okay. Will I? Likely no. I said this on my tape and I stand by it. The nature of the show is, are you bad enough to do it or not? When there was the first season, it wasn't who's the dorkiest dude who built the dorkiest course in their mom's backyard. That mm-hmm. wasn't the show. That's not the spirit of it. It's can this get set up and can you do it? So I want to carry that flag. Like it's put up or shut up. It's can you do this thing? It's not who trained on their backyard course. Like, so would it benefit me? Likely. But it's still, I mean, whatever you build is not going to be the exact parameters of these things either. So it'll help. But I mean, I don't know. Practice makes perfect. But maybe you practice... And your course is just like an inch off from this one or something. So it could kind of hurt you in the long run. And it's just not in the spirit of it. And it's like, I like the entertaining aspects. I mean, even in gymnastics, which was my past, once every month or two, we'd set up like a giant obstacle course. So I just want to, as an adult, be able to do a big obstacle course. I mean, if someone had one of these things in their backyard, I'd love to do it just for the fun. You know,
not for
like,
the, yeah.
The only one I know about, it's, you know, you do it on national TV. So, okay, so be it. I'd rather not be, you know, subjected to like that stress of, I remember lining up at the starting gate and I was like, no one pointed a gun at my head. Like, I don't need to be here. I don't need to do it. It's like, I drove to St. Louis. I put myself up in a hotel. Like, I sent an audition tape. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, all this added stress. I'm like, I could have just sat at home and, like, gone to bed and, like, ate some chicken. I'm like, what am I doing? So, now it's been 2 years removed. So it's funny how time works, right? Because at that moment, I was like, oh, what am I doing? And now 2 years removed, I'm like, I got to do that again.
Right.
And I'm sure I'll line up again. Should I get that call? Hopefully I do. And I'll be like, what am I doing? I did this to myself again. I learned my lesson and I'm an idiot. But it is so fun. And just to go on TV and, you know, be able to interact with it. I could bring a lot of wrestling to a non-wrestling audience. Not that I was selling wrestling, but when people haven't, it's funny. Like wrestling, you get like everyone's so critical. But when you take elements of wrestling outside of wrestling, then like that entire critical lens is removed and everyone loves it. Like, so I showed up on the show and I'm like, everyone here is a dork and they practice on their mom's courses in their backyards, which is true.
Yep.
And they're just like, oh my God, like this guy's saying the craziest stuff. But that's pro wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. And so all I did was add these little elements of pro wrestling and the producers are like, okay, get him on.
Right,
like,
put he's him got on. A knack for the television.
Do another interview with him. And it's just me saying the stuff that was whatever. Like, I thought my sex appeal was going to carry me up the wall, and it didn't. So I said that. And it's like, but they're just like, what is this guy even talking about? And it's like, so that is what's so fun. So I'd like to do it again because, hey, I want to do the course. It's just, I think I could do well on it. And then it's just such a neat thing to be able to interact with these people that aren't ready for you.
Yep.
Because it just scared people that you know, they wanted the course, good on them, but they're not, you know, used to just like that other world of wrestling that we can kind of, and when you do it, again, you could do that in at a wrestling show, and people be like, oh, I looked better when Rick Rude did it, or you didn't do it well, or you're copying this guy, or you suck, or whatever they would say, inevitably.
Right.
You do it outside of wrestling, and they're like, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
You're so right. That's so true. I mean, sometimes like it drives me nuts that like when I'm such a big wrestling fan, but like I'm not a critical wrestling fan. Like, I'm like, I just want to be entertained. I'm not gonna question the writing choices. And there's no other, I think, form of entertainment where people are so at an event critical of how they feel the writers are using that wrestler.
And it's strange.
It makes my head hurt sometimes. And I can only imagine for you guys, it's even more infuriating. It's like, just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. I mean, like, Chael Sonnen, pro wrestler, Conor McGregor, pro wrestler. And it's like, no one ever gives them, like, they're not even pro wrestlers, and they're the best pro wrestlers on the planet right now. You know, and it's like, Conor McGregor's the best pro wrestler. He doesn't even do pro wrestling, and he's the best at it. So
he's
so
good on the microphone.
Yeah,
too.
He does. Yeah. It's pro wrestling, but he just brings in that showmanship.
Ted hates Conor McGregor.
I do. He's a great fighter, but honestly, I wish sometimes he would shut up. But on the other hand, I love Chael Sonnen. So I mean, I just pick and choose.
Oh yeah, that's.
And Sonnen, to his credit, man, I mean, he got some matches he got some fights he never should have got, but his mouth got him there.
Oh yeah, yeah, pro wrestling.
Yeah,
like I said, I love doing it. Anytime you can do it outside of legit pro wrestling, then all of a sudden it's just like, I don't know, you can like open people's eyes to it. They don't know, but it's like, it's just fun.
Yeah, and I dislike McGregor, but he's very good at fighting. He's very good at promos. Like, I give him that respect.
You better hope he doesn't have his Washington State combative license, buddy.
Yeah.
Right?
He's going to hear this, and you're in trouble.
Well, we got you on our back, and you're 200-0. So.
No, that's true. Well,
we're safe.
201 real fast.
Well, I love what you're saying, because it goes back to something that Ted was saying a little bit before when you joined us, and it's about challenging yourself, doing things that will always challenge yourself. And I would imagine that's the beauty of being your own boss, is that you can constantly find ways to challenge yourself.
I remember doing a tour of Ireland in 2009, and Rob Van Dam was on the tour, and there was like this Razor scooter that somebody had, and he's taking the Razor scooter to this like adjacent parking garage and like riding it down the parking garage and just like crashing and burning. And I found out about it because he came back to the locker room just like covered in like road rash type like scars, and I was like, dude, like what happened? He's like, oh, I got this Razor scooter, and I'm like, ride it down the parking garage. And I was like, yo, I have my camera. Do you want to, like, go? Like, I would love to do that. Like, let's go do that. He's like, yeah, man. So we went to this parking garage, whatever. And I remember him as he's, like, making this crazy turn and, like, wiping out a parking garage on a Razor scooter. I remember him just like kind of yelling out like, you got to keep challenging yourself. And for whatever reason, like in that moment, it stuck with me because I don't know how old this guy is, but he definitely doesn't need to be. And it's a funny, weird example. Like, but he definitely doesn't need to be riding a Razor scooter down a parking garage. And then for that to be an example for him of like, you have to be challenging yourself. I was like, he's right. Like, we could just sit here and be like, well, that's dumb, which it is, and it's unsafe. Or we could, it is a challenge, and we can kind of, I don't know, like, you got to keep challenging yourself. So I guess you have to know your bounds as well. But that always stuck with me in some weird way. So there's like elements of that within me too, where it's like, yeah, you got to keep, because the easier thing on American Ninja Warrior would have been to not apply, to not answer the phone call, to sit at home, yep, to watch it on TV and say I could do it, which I did every single year. It's so hard to like, you know, put yourself out there and be like, there's the water. If I fall in, this is going on national TV. Everyone's going to be like, that dude sucks. That's the risk that I take. And it's like, but you got to live. Like,
thank you.
It's like you got to try.
Plenty of times to back out too. Like years ago, you know, I just know for me personally, like years ago, like a guy that used to work on the morning show, we had like a boxing match at a casino in front of like 2,500 people, right?
Yeah, we sold it out, and it was the big match was Ted taking on another guy boxing match, and then the undercard was just ridiculous stuff. Like I took on a dude in thumb wrestling.
Okay,
yeah, you know, we completely choreographed the whole thing, but the
dude was what, 6'2"?
Yeah, a few extra.
He was the biggest guy at work at the time, so I was like, I'll pick on him. Oh, but I remember, like, you know, I remember getting knocked out or, you know, getting the button, you get hit on the button in training sessions and sparring. And there was always times to quit, but it was just like, I can't. Like, I got to go through with this. I got to prove, you know what I mean? Like, I got to see it out. With that said, much respect for what you guys do get in the ring. That adrenaline dump is still the craziest drug I've ever done. It was like, as soon as that curtain opened, it was like a blackout, and then I kind of wake up, and there's this massive dude punching me in the face.
That's what's crazy, too, because like even a lot of times you'll do shows, and you have to like fly right to the next city and do like the next one, and there's stuff like that, and it's like, so on paper, you're like, I have to instantly go to bed, because I need to get as much sleep as possible. I'm already not going to get enough sleep. I have to do this again tomorrow, but then you don't want to go to bed, 'cause you're still in this like zone, and that's part of why we do it, so you almost want to like soak it in or whatever. So I'm just sitting there just being like, oh yeah, because like if you can't enjoy those moments, what's the point? Like none of us are getting rich doing this, so it's like that is why we do it. And then it's such a weird zone you get in, because you're like, okay, I need to go to bed instantly, like I have to go to bed, and then you're like, but I don't want to, because if I go to bed then I can't enjoy this moment, which is like what all the sacrifice and stupidity is for. So it's like this strange world, you're like, go to bed, no, just don't go to bed, just like, because there is like,
it's like the afterglow.
That 100%.
You want to enjoy it.
My favorite moment was when I was playing in a band and playing shows. My favorite part, I mean, the show was always fun, but it's such a blur, like you said. Like everything is just, I'm playing drums and I'm not really noticing what anyone's doing. But that moment when it's over, it's just like you just want to relive it and you want to talk to people about it. So I can see.
You kind of reflect on it. And it's
I think even beforehand sometimes, like, you know, like we do radio, but if it's like a big concert and we're going to do a stage announcement or I'm going to do some comedy, like, part of me still likes that weird feeling of like the butterflies and the nervousness beforehand too. That's part of the juice too.
Dude, that's part. I mean, full disclosure, I've never been a ring announcer before in my entire life. You know what I mean? Like I've done stage announcements in front of like tens of thousands of people at like a big amphitheater. Right. Yeah. Right? So when my buddy Jim Perry from Defy Wrestling is like, hey, I know you always are a great champion for wrestling of all types and be awesome to have you be a part of it. And the only thing was, I don't want to be a play-by-play or a commentator, because even though I grew up my entire life loving wrestling, I don't think on the fly I can announce what moves they're doing. I think I would get too flustered. I'd be like, oh, he just flipped him over. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
He's over his head.
Yeah.
So he's did a thing, and the other guys also did a thing.
And the great part is, like, I already have somebody I'm thinking for that, so don't even worry about it. I want you to be like the host, the ring announcer guy. And it's one of those moments, like you said, where like, all right, the easy answer is no. This is way out of my comfort zone.
Right.
Like, what am I doing? But there's that, man, no, I have to do it. I want the butterflies in my stomach. And now it's, of course, all my buddies are like, are you nervous? Are you nervous? I'm like, I wasn't until you kept asking me.
That's not helping, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
But it's, there's
don't
such,
look down.
I'm so pumped. I mean, all right, I'll ask you, like, what advice would you have for someone like me? Like, I mean, I
run. No.
Okay, good. See ya.
No, you'll be fine. It's doing exactly what you're doing now, you know? Like, obviously, you're comfortable talking, so that's all it is. And you've been in front of a crowd, so it's like, if you've never seen another person or you've been holed away in some studio, maybe there'd be some quick learning curve or whatever.
But right,
like,
right.
It's going to be the same as the stage announcing, you know, and you have energy and you're excited about wrestling. If you were pretending to like wrestling, that could be another issue, but like you like wrestling. So that
was, for me, this is just a passion. Yeah,
fun is contagious and that will shine through, you know, like that's the kind of stuff that's
a great point.
That's what, like, what matters.
I'm going to steal that line. I like that.
I do too.
Yeah. That's,
people pick up on that.
Sami Zayn is the one who told me that. It's like my best friend in wrestling. So,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so I can't even take credit for it because it stuck to me. When he said it to me, I was like, dude, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the, we were using it, like, we were talking just about dancing or whatever. Because, like, we both love dancing, but we're, like, not good at dancing. Mm-hmm. But what we lack in skill, we make up for just enthusiasm. So it's like, so we would just go to these places and just dance like wild men. I mean, like, someplace had a pool table, and he's got the pool cue, and he's like shaking it around his head and waving it around. I'm like, well, we're getting kicked out of here for sure. You can't do that. Like, that's a weapon, you know. Like, that's really borderline dancing now. Now you're actually assaulting people, pretty much. So, and it was like, and we were just talking about it. And he's like, you know, if you see some guy in the corner just like having the time of his life, like maybe he's not the best dancer, but like if they're having so much fun, like when you look at that, you're like, I want to be having that much fun. Like,
yeah,
we were scared that people were like, oh, he's some kind of loser or whatever. But like, I don't really think that's, I mean, I look at him and I'm like, oh man, that dude looks like he's having so much fun. Right. I want to be having fun.
I wish I could do that.
My friends, like, we're all cool or whatever. So we're standing in the corner, like just being cool, and we're too cool for it. And like, I don't know. You just got to.
And he's going home saying, I had the time of my life. And you guys are like, well, that was all right. You
know what
I
mean?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So he's just like, and then other people see it. They want to do it. And fun is contagious. And I was like, that carries over with, everything. So. When he said it to me, you know, it meant a lot. So, yeah, happy to pass it along.
Nice. I love that. I got to ask you, as a guy who's done so many different wrestling promotions, mm-hmm. what's been the weirdest one for you?
Weirdest? Oh, man. We had a promotion in Ohio that wasn't exclusively, but it was running in prisons. So for like a year, we did like a handful of shows in prisons. So that was awesome.
That is interesting.
And I'm thinking, I mean, there's just so many stories that come out of it. Like, I thought they weren't going to be like real prisoners, if that makes any sense. So I'm like, they're going to be in for like traffic violations or like minor drug offenses or whatever. So
yeah.
It wasn't until after the first show when I asked the warden, I'm like, what are these guys in here for? And he's like, oh, everything. I'm like, well, what's everything? Like some weed or something? And he's like, no, he's like, the crowd that you just performed for, there's two confirmed cop killers. Like, they're guys serving life and stuff. I was like, I thought these guys were in for like a month or two. Like, he's like, oh, no, there's like a lot of them are like serving life with no chance of parole and type things. I'm like, why did you send me out there? Like, are you kidding me? Like, and I was the heel. So I'm like getting these guys' faces and yelling at them to do something. And I'm like, I would have rethought every single thing that I did. If I knew there was like legit murderers out there, like what the heck? So it was crazy. It was really crazy. It was set up just like any, you know, independent wrestling show. So just guardrails and a crowd. And
I was about to ask, like, I thought maybe like, is there like a giant fence around you guys?
That's why.
Like, put me in a steel cage, guys, to protect me from them.
That's what I kind of thought. And I thought like guards would like walk us to the ring. And like, no, there was like guards were in the back of the room, so whatever's going to happen would have already happened before they could ever have gotten there. So we were like really exposed, and my plan was like, I've never been to prison, but you know, you watch TV shows or something. So I'm like, well, I'm going to walk out and I'm going to walk the guardrail right next to everybody so they know I'm not scared, you know, because everyone else is going in and going right to the ring. And I'm like, I'm going to get in their faces so they know what up, you know, what's up. But the prison crowd, I mean, big surprise, is way different than a normal crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So I come out, I walk along the guardrail. The first dude just yells the craziest thing I've ever heard that I can't repeat. And I'm just like, what? I'm so scared. I'm going right to the ring. Like, I mean, you're used to pro wrestling shows where what's the worst that happens? Like, you suck. And you're like, yeah, okay, well, whatever. That doesn't really, that kind of bounces off my skin at this point. These guys are not yelling that kind of stuff. It's crazy stuff. So I'm just like, oh my God, I'm dead and I'm so frightened. And yeah, it was an experience. And you're not going to get, you know, like the hokey aspects of wrestling, like, all right, let's all clap in unison now, everybody. You're not going to get hardened criminals to be like, let's all clap, guys. Like, so
we're not chanting, this is awesome.
No, yeah. So it's just a completely different, like, I'd put a fork in my knee pad or something as the bad guy. I get the fork out and then I'm the biggest, you know, baby face in the building now because everyone loves me. And I'm like,
brought your own shank.
Yeah,
we have one too.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I'm doing it behind the ref's back and everybody's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Kill him.
Right.
I mean, really, kill him.
Stab him in the kidney.
I made like the biggest like rookie mistake too when I first came out because like, they're like, oh, cut a promo. You're the bad guy, whatever. So I come out. And I grab the microphone and I'm like, just thinking, okay, Wrestling 101, whatever, insult the place. So I'm like, this place sucks. And everybody, yeah.
We agree.
And I was like, how stupid am I? Like, how, forget what I did here, have pride in their home prison? Like, of course this place sucks. So I was just sitting there and I'm like, why are they, oh, I'm an idiot. I'm so dumb. And I'm like, well, they all love me now. I just said the prison sucks right in front of the warden and all the guards and... I'm like, how do I save this? So I'm like, do you want to know why? I'm like, because you guys got it so easy. And look at these cush beds. You're sleeping better than me on the outside. And I saw you're getting 3 meals a day. We just came from the other prison down the street. They really had a bad. Now, those guys were tough. You guys are a bunch of pansies and whatever. But again, I thought they were not real prisoners. Whatever.
What is this, a punk-ass state prison?
Yeah.
This could be a documentary.
And like, even the warden was like all the things that he wanted to say, but he couldn't. He'd be like, oh, say this. Or talk about this prison and say they're tougher or something like that. Or like, tell them we're going to take away the movie night. Or like, so he would get little things in where I'm like, this is real borderline. Like, I don't know how I feel about this. And the whole thing was interesting because even when they approached me with it, I was like, is this a thing? Like, wow. How about we do it at a kid's hospital? Like, why are we providing entertainment for criminals? Like,
that's a good point.
We could go to like so there's probably sick children somewhere that they could use a free show. Like,
we've been waiting years for you guys to be here in the Northwest. And you guys are performing in
Ohio.
For literal murderers. I was like, I don't know if I'm even like on board with the concept, really. Like, this is kind of strange.
Wow.
And then after the show, they're like, you can go out there and meet everybody. And I was like, well, I'm good, you know?
Are they able to buy my t-shirt? If not, I'm out.
Yeah, I was in their face telling them to like, why don't you do something? And, you know, you're a wuss or whatever. So I'm like, yeah, I'm probably not going to go out there and meet them now. That seems like a real bad idea.
We had our moment.
Yeah. But yeah. I don't know, like morbid curiosity. I was like, after a while, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go. Like, I don't know. Because we're wrestlers, right? Like, I'm fascinated by the story. Like, you hope to write a book someday, and I'm like, well, this is part of a chapter, dude, I guess, right?
This is a whole book. Yeah, I mean, I'm not kidding. Like, I wish there was like video cameras and a documentarian.
Yeah.
I mean, just the whole leading up to it, and
oh,
then
it was insane.
Like, that would be a whole documentary in itself. Yeah, like, not even sure. Just like a blurb. Like, that is like, that's insane.
And I don't think
I did not expect that story.
No one. It was pretty much like the warden. It was like he was retiring later that year. So I think it was just like his, like, on the way out, like, here's something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it was pretty hush-hush. So I just think it was, like, something that one guy wanted to do, sort of.
Yeah.
He could slide it in there. Like, it's definitely not a thing.
I remember being a kid seeing wrestling.
Lame duck Warden. What the hell?
Yeah, sure. That's what it was. And it's like, so I went out there to meet these guys after the show, eventually, just, again, the morbid curiosity. And I was like, and the first guy was, like, wanted to give me a hug. And I was like, well, I'm going to get stabbed in the back, like, right now. You know, like, let me just put myself in the most vulnerable position with the stranger that I was just
show me
in
your
his
hands.
Face, who's a prisoner. So I'm like, do I hug this guy? You're like, I'm going to do it. I mean, I'm just waiting for, like, the warm sensation of being stabbed. And I'm like, here we go. But getting to talk to these people, I really did a 180 about, like, because I was like, I don't even know why we're doing this. And then these guys were just so touched and so affected by it and so appreciative. And it was like, it was really, and they were, you know, a lot of them were in there for life. And I'm like, is this a thing? Do you guys get entertainment? And the one guy's like, well, we had a softball game in 83.
Oh.
And that just hits you, right? Because I'm like, wow.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. That's my whole life. And you got to watch a softball? He's like, yeah, it was not, you know, we got to watch, like, these like ladies play softball, like wasn't.
Oh, they didn't even get to play softball.
I don't think they played it. They, like, they like watched
giving them bats.
Yeah, like, that's a solid point.
23 years ago or 30 some years ago, I was just like, oh, whoa.
Wow.
And then I remember it was around the holidays, and this one guy in particular was just like so genuine, and he was just like, hey man, I hope you have like a nice Christmas. And it just I was floored, you know. Like, to this day, it just really, really rocked me because I was like, I'm gonna go home in like an hour. To like a house and eat whatever I want and do whatever I do, and like I live this life where I'm a pirate and I just get to go around and hang out with dudes and like have the best life ever, and you hope that I have a good Christmas. Like, oh my, it was just a weird, like, it made it all like worthwhile to me because I was just like, I can't even, like,
wow,
I was like fighting back tears. Like when I think about it sometimes,
that's heavy.
Yeah, it rocked me to my core because I was just like, it wasn't sarcastic. It wasn't, he was so genuine. And it was like, I don't know, it just touched me because I was like, wow, how can this guy like, how, you know, and why? And it was so powerful. And then I was super on board because I was like, okay, everyone makes a mistake, I guess, whatever. I don't know what you guys are in here for, but like at least for 2 seconds or an hour or whatever it is, we're really, really, I assume, I've never been to prison, but I assume when you're there, they're not like, everyone get together in a group and get really rowdy about something. That's probably frowned upon. So the wrestling show was the one chance where they can all get on the same team.
Have an almost normal quality of life moment.
And
everybody deserves, regardless. I mean, some are extreme compared to others, but I mean, it doesn't mean that we should be treating people like animals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like it was crazy.
Wow. And there's always going to be the extreme cases of some people being pure evil, but also there's a lot of people in prison, frankly, that are 18, 19, and
young,
just make
dumb
very
mistakes.
Poor mistake, you sure. know, choices.
Sure. I remember the one we went into, and they just put us in with like the general population. So I thought like there would be like a direct door to the gymnasium or wherever we're at, and it was like we came in the front door. It was like proper old school prison with like these big, loud, noisy doors and the whole thing. And then there was a tape line on the ground, or maybe it was painted. Regardless, and you had to walk, you know, in that single file line, and they put us in just with the guys. Like they put us in the line just amongst dudes to like walk this hallway, and I'm just like, this is crap. Like, I'm in prison. Like, you just had this moment of like, what did I do? No, I didn't do this. I don't know. What am I doing? And you're walking the line. And they had flyers, like, on the wall for this wrestling show.
Wow.
And I'm looking at myself, like, on this flyer, and I'm like, this is the craziest moment in my life. Like, what am I? And then, obviously, this flyer's been hung up for, you know, days or weeks or months or whatever it is. So every person in the prison is like, oh, there's that dude with the beard who has been looking at, and now he's standing in this. So everyone's
How long ago was this?
Probably 2-3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So everyone's just eyeing me in the prison, but you don't know if these are like, oh, cool, like, good, he's here, yay. Like, are these fans? Or is this like, oh, here's this guy. Like, so I'm just like, I don't even know if I'm in danger or not. And like, but we really got the proper experience of like, you know, again, like no special treatment, no whisk you away to some locker room. It was like, all right, get in the line with the guys. And I'm like, can I not get in the line with the guys? Like, I don't know if I ever want to be in this line. Like, I don't, but.
Would you do it again?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Every
wow.
day. Yeah. Cause it was just, cool. It was such an insane experience. And we got to do maybe 4 or 5 of them. So.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really, really, really crazy. I don't think it'll ever happen again cause that warden has since retired. And I think, you know.
Yeah, how do you pitch that?
Right.
You know, like we want to come and simulate fighting and rally, get these guys all hyped up.
Yeah, we're going to get them real pumped up.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in their faces, not knowing that they're hardened criminals. And
we're going to beat each other up, and they're going to cheer.
But
when we're done, they're going to be fine.
Yeah, it's going to be real riled up for you, and then we'll leave, and then you guys
That
just...
is amazing. Like, that is, I mean, it's just what an incredible story.
Oh, 100%. Wow. It was really, really something. So that's what jumps out for, I forget the original question, but something like, what's the craziest
promotion? I mean, that
wins.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could ever, if we had a round table of all of you, like your peers,
sure.
I think you would win that hand of poker.
I remember Cabana being like, I want to drive, you know, 6 hours from Chicago to do those. Like old Cabana being like this, I have to be involved because he had heard about it. Cause they were hush hush as well, you know? And I was like, well, dude, the money's like, you know, it's just during the week. It's the weekend. It's just, we're just doing it for the experience really. He's like, I don't care. I will come for free just because, like, because again, we're all just driven by those experiences and whatever. So it was certainly an experience.
Wow, man, that's unbelievable.
Yeah,
wow.
The Johnny Cash of independent wrestling.
Yeah, I did have I had a little graphic guy who actually lives in Washington. I had him like mock up a little
like a San Quentin
silhouette kind of of me, and that's when I like.
Oh my
pseudo
gosh.
Advertised my appearance in the prison because I was thinking that and we started, I mean, for a while we were doing you know, we did 3 to 5 and I thought they were going to continue, and I was like, this is going to be my thing. Like, I am going to be the Johnny Cash of, like,
right?
I'm like, I love it. Like, that's
Matt Cross, prison wrestler.
Yeah.
Right? The crescendo is you in Folsom.
right?
That's the WrestleMania moment right there.
Let's do it.
Folsom. I don't want to monopolize all of your time. I know you got stuff. You just got off of a plane, and we're selfishly taking up all of your time, but this has just been unbelievable. I did want to quickly just touch on loving what you're doing at Lucha Underground and what a fun and different type of a vibe as a fan. Is it weird for you to wrestle with a mask?
Sure. I mean, it's like anything, you know, what I tell people, I get asked that a lot, and it's like, go mow your lawn and like put a mask on. Like, yeah. It's different. Like anything you could possibly imagine doing, like throw a mask on, like.
Was it weird when they first pitched that and you're like, well, I have a beard. Is this going to work with my mask? And like, because it's so unique and it's such a cool look.
When they gave me the original mask, it was a full mask. And I was like, this is going to be probably an issue because I have a giant beard. And they're like, well, just try it anyway. So I'm putting on, my beard was even bigger at the time. So I'm trying to put this mask on and like cram my beard up there. But it's so like epic. It's like falling out of all the sides and just, it looked so garbage. And they're like, well, let's see it. It's like, it was the worst looking thing ever. And I'm like, this can't work. And then I was just like, is there some way of cutting out a hole for my beard? And luckily it is like Robert Rodriguez and this is Hollywood. So there's an entire team of wardrobe people on set. So within 5 to 10 minutes, they were like, all right. And boom. And someone came back with it, you know, seconds later and it was already fashioned with the hole in it. And they're like, try this. And I put it on and it was like, hey, that's kind of different. Like this is a whole look. So it kind of was like a little serendipitous, like, you know, thing where it wasn't meant to be a bearded character or anything like that. And it's like, I could kind of bring that to it and breathe a lot of life into it. I'm grateful that if I had been like 2 years into wrestling, 3 years into wrestling and been given a mask, it very well could have been an issue. Mm-hmm. I'm just very glad that I was at that point, like 14 years in. So a lot of it is confidence and trust and feel. And like when I do springboards with it, I can't see down. So when I do springboards, it's 100% feel. And springboards are like sketchy as is, and then you can't see down, so I can't really see my feet and stuff like that. So it's like you just have to, well, I've done this for 14 years and I know what I'm doing, so I'll just do it now. But the first, I mean, every time you do it, but especially the first couple times you do that, when you're like, when you're consciously just relying on like, I believe I can do it, mm-hmm. and then you do it. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, like, you know, Prince Puma,
Shane Strickland as well with Killshot. Sure. Yeah,
a lot of us are like, I mean, I'd never worn tights before. And that seems silly on the surface, but like it makes a difference. So it's like I'd never worn tights. I'd never worn big leather boots. I'd never worn a mask. Like, and then I didn't get those things like phased in. Like it was like in one that I was given the outfit and everything maybe 2 hours before the very first episode. So when you watch, if you go back and watch the first episode, I mean, I'm getting used to all. I'd been given it 2 hours prior. I'm wearing it for the first time
like,
there.
And go.
Like, yeah. Like, here's your thing and do it. And I'm like, all right, I'll just wear boots and a mask. And like, what am I doing? Like, so the whole outfit. So it's like, I wish there was almost like a greater understanding of that. Or like, yeah, Prince Puma's wearing like boots doing like 630s. And like, we're all doing the craziest moves ever in like new outfits. Like, and I don't think that can be like undersold. I mean, like, I don't know. Take LeBron James and be like, wear these shoes. You don't pick them. You're going to wear these shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to affect his performance.
100%.
And immensely so. And people would be, that would be a huge talking point. And it's funny how wrestling, it's like, no one mentions or thinks about that kind of stuff. And it's like, even every ring is different, different size, different, what are the ropes? What are the consistency? How tight are they? How is the, there's just so many different factors. It's not like,
I never even thought about all that.
No like, one does. Yeah. It's not like basketball where it's like the arena or whatever, or the court is this size. Period.
But I think about like as a guy, I play hockey for fun, like rec leagues and stuff, and I play goalie. And if like a strap is off, or if I'm using a different helmet or different pads, my head is not in the game at all.
Yeah.
And this is just me screwing around with my buddies at 10 o'clock at night at a small dinky rink. You're doing it on television.
Yeah.
And also risking your injury, your partner, the guy you're wrestling's injuries. Sure. You know, I mean, there's a lot of. Oh my goodness. I didn't even think about that.
And the rings themselves would be the equivalent of the goal. So you show up in Salt Lake City and now the goal is this shape in Salt Lake City. Right. So you're like, oh, okay, it's this shape. And then they're like, and here's the pads you're going to wear in Salt Lake City. And you're but I don't like these pads.
They don't fit
me. That doesn't matter. Like, where, I mean, literally cut a hole in this thing so it even fits on my face. Like, mm-hmm. It wasn't even made for me. So even the eye holes don't even like line up. So the whole match, I'm just trying to like make it happen. And so, yeah, it's difficult. But, but yeah, it's such a really fun environment, you know, and I just love being there because it's so rewarding and they treat us so well. And it's just like all the good parts about wrestling and like none of the bad. It's just, it's really, really nice what they've kind of, what they've accomplished there.
And such great feedback from the fans.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, yeah, it's just been so much fun as a fan to watch. I mean, the story arcs and just the way it's done, it's so got a great gritty vibe to it.
Yeah,
it's such a well done show. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah,
we've been sold false alternatives for years. You know, everything comes out being like Diet WWE or WWE Lite, and it's like it's always sold to us like this is the new different thing, and it's in a big arena, and it's wrestling, and there's guys, and they're doing this thing, and you're like, oh man, that sounds different at all. That sounds like everything ever. Like, what? And this is the this is the only genuine alternative since, what, like, debatably ECW in, like, 98? So you got to go back, like, over 15 years to even have a talking point of something that might have been different. So it's like, I don't know. There's a lot to be said just for that, where it's like, oh, it's genuinely fresh. It's genuinely different. Like, it's a true alternative. Like, and it's about time, you know? And I think that's why it is, you know, enjoying the success it is, because it's like, I don't know, wrestling doesn't have to be just... Someone else said this to me, and I wish I remembered who it was, and I enjoyed it so much, because they said, what we are given as wrestling fans is one family's view of this art form. And I was like, man, you're right. It's what one family thinks of this art form.
Mm-hmm.
So if I went to the museum in Seattle, and I went to the museum in Cleveland, and I went to the one in Paris, and it was all Van Gogh, every single one. And I'm like, oh, this is great. It's great. That's what I understand as art. And then you went somewhere, and you saw your first Monet, and you're like, oh my God. Like,
this exists.
It would blow your mind.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, just because it's like what one family thinks of pro wrestling isn't pro wrestling. It's their view of it. And it's like, oh my God, that is true. So it's like, here's a different person's view of an entire art form for arguably the first time ever.
It's funny you say, because I think about, like, I went to WrestleMania weekend. I went, did a bunch of interviews on Radio Row through the WWE, and it was a great experience. Went to WrestleMania, and it's like, you know, this 100,000 people, giant stadium. And then when WrestleMania ended, went over to, I think, the Knights of Columbus Hall at like 12:30 at night. And VIP Wrestling, they put on a show for like 100-something people. Brian Cage was there, Johnny Gargano, and Joey Ryan, and Candice LeRae. And I was telling my wife the next day, she's like, I don't understand how, because she didn't go with me. She's like, I'm not going to, this is not my world. Like, I'll only go to WrestleMania, and then I'll be that person. It's like, let's go home.
So she's
like, so did you have fun at that? Were you? I'm like, I had, if not as much fun, more fun. It was like, because it was different, and it was... Like you said, it was a whole different version of what I love, but I don't even know how to put it into words. I think you summed it up great. It's like, it's still this amazing art. It's just delivered in a different way, and it's still amazing. And the crowd was loving it, and it's like, we're here till 3 a.m, and none of us are acting like we're tired. We're like, I'm still jacked. Like, if there was another wrestling show, like, down the street, I probably would have went to that one, too.
That's awesome. Like, I heard about that show, too. I was wondering how it would do, because, it started, 12:30 at night or whatever?
They had to put it back because the traffic was so bad getting out of the AT&T Stadium.
Oh, sure.
It was supposed to start at midnight, and I'm stressed, and I'm like, we're missing this. Like, right. We're not even moving. And then when we got there, they literally just started because they're like, we noticed that there was nobody here, and it was like, oh, parking is an issue. But it was awesome.
Yeah, I know Sam McCallahan is doing a Wrestling Revolver show that I'm going to be doing this year, where it's like, I don't even know what time. He said it was going to be early, so I don't know if it's 10 in the morning or something. It's like Pile Drivers and Pancakes or something it's called.
Nice.
But he's trying to do like an early type thing. So there's just so many like different avenues and things like that. It should be fun. So I don't know. Hopefully that'll enjoy
Suplex
this.
Suplex and sausages.
Yeah, right. So that'll be like
body slams and bacon.
Right. Oh, we could do this for a while.
Yeah. He's like, I'm hungry. Stop talking about food.
Matt, I didn't think about it, but
Before we finish.
Yes.
Great beard.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I feel a little left out. I mean, Ted actually put time into making sure his beard was nicely groomed for you, which I thought was
good.
Cool.
And I know we got a great beard coming in. I got to shampoo it today.
Oh, good, you
know,
yeah.
No, it's also good that we finally have a guy in the studio that has a similar physique as us and that takes care of his body just
like exactly.
We do.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good.
The beard's not the only thing we have in common.
Right,
Matt, again, Friday, it's going to be Defy Wrestling. It's at the Washington Hall, which is a newly renovated old building, like built in the 1900s. Jimi Hendrix played there. Fugazi played there.
Oh, really?
Green River. It's got a great history of just unique stuff, and it's been like dormant for a long time, and they put a bunch of money into it to renovate it. So I'm really excited to see what this venue is going to be and what the vibe is going to be there. I'm so pumped to watch you do your thing. DefyWrestling.com to get tickets. And if you want to follow Matt on Twitter, all you got to do is just go to MDog with 2 G's, Matt Cross, and Son of Havoc. You can just look it up on Twitter. I'm sure it'll pop up, and Facebook as well, and all that good stuff. And I remember I loved your interview when you did with Kevin Gill a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
I walked away with a few like things that I remember. Oh, man, that's just good life lessons. And I also something I was like when you went on a tangent about buying bands T-shirts. That's something I truly believe in as well.
Yeah.
It drives my wife nuts. She's like, no more T-shirts. I'm like, that's just my way of giving back to a band that put on a great show.
It's more than the T-shirt, yeah.
And you nailed it. There are some shirts I own that I've never worn.
Not the same.
But it's like, in my opinion, like this is my way of like almost like tipping the band.
For sure.
And I just want to say, if anyone who's going to the show, obviously you're all going to have your T-shirts, and I know you have a shop on ProWrestlingTees.com. buy the t-shirts from the wrestlers as well. This is the way you guys do your thing. This is your livelihood, and it's a way of giving back to the art form that we all love. So I just wanted to throw that out there, and I love what you had to say on Kevin's podcast.
I appreciate it. Like, I flew 100,000 miles last year, so that's so much time in airports. So I mean, I'm a bodybuilder, right? So it's like I'm going to eat every 2.5 hours. So I can't be like, well, this, you know, airport sandwich is really overpriced, I'm just going to starve forever, because then there's no point in going to the gym and, you know, just losing all these, like, whatever hard work that I put in there. So it's like, you got to end up spending all this money. So it's like, it's funny how far those little things go. So whether that's the Uber to the airport, or if I drive there, the parking for the airport, or the baggage fees, or the whatever. I mean, like, most of that stuff's not even like, oh, going in my pocket, I'm rich, woo! It's just like, it's like, this will get me to the show so I can break my neck for you. You know,
not to put
a negative spin on it, but that's the reality.
True, I mean, I remember when I got home, and my wife from WrestleMania weekend, when I went to like WrestleCon, and I spent more time at wrestling shows than I did asleep. Yeah. Like, it was just ridiculous. And I came home with like signed picture from Joey Ryan. She's like, what are you going to do with that? I'm like, nothing. I just wanted to get a picture with him, and I didn't want to be that guy to say, can I get a picture and just walk away? Like, I wanted to at least be like, here, some, like, this is tangible. This is like, I want to buy your autograph, because I just wanted to meet you, but I didn't want to monopolize your time, because I know your time is money.
Like, it's... On behalf of everyone, I thank you. No, that's cool.
I think it's important. Like, even with like Colt Cabana too. It's or Dalton Castle. It's like, my wife's like, okay, this, of course he had his boys and they're all in their outfits. And she's like, okay, this picture's pretty cool. And I'm like, that was the best $20 I spent all weekend.
We can hang this one up.
I wouldn't go that far, but.
and I was already excited for the show, but now you brought up Fugazi or whatever. So now I'm 10 times more pumped. I mean, I love that, because the wrestling in general is my journey through punk rock. You know, I mean, like, this is what keeps me in it. Like, my friends didn't play instruments. So I couldn't, I didn't have the means to sleep on couches and not make any money doing that.
Yep.
So I found my own way.
There's a beautiful aspect of that. Yeah,
to do that.
Right.
So it's like, when I can play venues that have like history like that and stuff like that, like, there's First Avenue in Minnesota where Eric Cannon runs, and it's like, that's like where Against Me will play when they're on tour. Oh. When I see like their tours, it's like, oh, Against Me's playing. I'm like, well, I've done there. Like, Andrew Jackson Jihaz plays Turner's Hall in like Milwaukee, and I wrestle there. And I'm like, well, I've done that. It makes me feel accomplished on some level. Yeah. So now it's like, Fugazi, like, now we're talking.
Dope.
Like,
yeah,
so
I agree.
I love stuff like that. Like, I'll never forget like that little tidbit of like,
oh, cool.
If wrestling ends this Friday, I'm going to be like, I wrestled someplace Fugazi played.
I perform,
you know, like,
where Fugazi performed.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like that. It won't mean anything to anyone else, but like, I will never forget that.
Now you got to come out to Waiting Room and it'll be perfect.
Oh, man. Done.
Oh, man, that's going to be so much fun on Friday. Thank you for taking time. I know I was like, oh, we'll get you out of here in 15, 20 minutes, and here it is like over an hour. And
I'll do it because I am a patient boy. I wait. How's that for a callback?
I wait.
Yeah, no worries, man.
I could geek out about music forever.
Yeah, same.
Now, again, go see him at Defy Wrestling. We're all going to be there. It's going to be a blast, and welcome to the Northwest again, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Can't wait.
All right. You know, usually we do another break, but why don't we just call it a cast? And because this has just been unbelievable, and I don't think anything we could do after this would be anywhere near as awesome as
this. I agree.
So. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to the Megacast, and you can follow us on Twitter @TheMegacast.
Peace. Mr. President, Marilyn Monroe.